Svayam rupa kramayam dadati svapanantikam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasari Gaura Bhaktavinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jagannatha Swami Nayanapatha Gami Nayanapatha Gami Bhavatu Me
Jagannatha Swami Nayanapatha Gami Nayanapatha Gami Bhavatu Me
Jagannatha Swami, O Lord of the Universe, please, Nayana Pata Gami. Nayana means eyes, and Pata means the path, and Gami means to go. So please go on the path of my eyes, basically. Sometimes translated as please be visible to me, but if you get more literal, then it is please go on the path of my eyes, or the pathway of my eyes. So, in this way, at every step, my Lord, may you be there. At every moment, may we remember your presence. May we not forget your presence ever. Nayana Patagami, Bhavat to me. So, not only to be present on the path of the eyes, but bhava to me. Bhava is referring to ecstasy. So giving me great love, great ecstasy, bhava to me. So in this way, we are praying to Lord Krishna, to always remember him, but not just religiously, but with love. So it is said, this is the true understanding of dealing with Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, in one of the Chatusloki, or one of the four verses, which are the root verses in which the whole Bhagavad Gita is contained. There it is said, Aham Savasya Bhavavo Mata Sarvam Pravartate Iti Mata Vajante Mam Buddha Bhava Samanvitaha. One who can see everything in me, that all the spiritual worlds or the material worlds, such a person is full of knowledge. He is Buddha. He is full of knowledge. He is wise. Buddha Bhava, and naturally he worships me with love, because seeing things in me means also to understand my nature, not just understand that there is a Supreme Lord behind everything, but also to understand the nature of that Supreme Lord, that the Supreme Lord is indeed very merciful. I was reading about Kardama Muni, who somehow or other was a powerful yogi, who approached the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Kardama Muni was greatly overwhelmed. After long austerity, he got the darshan of the Lord. So Kardama became quite emotional. But that was not everything. At that time, Krishna also became emotional, and tears were dropping from his eyes. And there's into a pond with water, which is now known as Bindusaravar. So it is Bindusaravar Lake, where the tears of the Lord fell. So that's Krishna. He is, it is said, he is Mardutvam. Mardutvam is a quality of Krishna, which means that his heart melts. He's not like just a deity made of stone or wood, and no reciprocation, some blessings. No, he is the devotee is very dear to Krishna.
So
those are the kind of things that are important, because one should never think that, oh, I am alone. I am left alone now. Everything has collapsed, or it never worked, or somehow or other. Now I am alone, totally abandoned, alone. But that is not the case. We are never alone, never. But why? Why is Krishna putting us through such trials and tribulations? I just said, Jiva Goswami explains. He said, Krishna does it because in the 10th canto, it is explained of the Bhagavatam. When the gopis are saying to Krishna, Krishna, why? We have given up everything. We have no material attachments. We left and abandoned our families all for your sake. Nothing was important to us other than you. And then why are you causing us suffering? They say it actually not so directly. They rather say to Krishna, we have a question. And that question is, they said that when there is loving service, different personalities reciprocate in different ways. Some are reciprocating with the love that they are receiving in exchange. Others, even when there's no loving offering, they still are kind and merciful. And others, they don't reciprocate at all. Can you please explain this? In this way, the gopis asked Krishna. And Krishna, he started explaining that actually, it is just like, he said, a wealthy man who has become poor and destitute. Such a man can only think of that wealth, of nothing else. In the same way, sometimes I must disappear, I must withdraw and leave the devotees. The devotees feel alone, just to increase that eagerness. That is all. So, in this way, Srila Jiva Goswami is describing the loving exchanges between Krishna and his eternal associates.
What can be said? Meanwhile,
we are on the ground. Meanwhile, we are living a life in the material world. Meanwhile, we are experiencing a certain amount of failure in our life. It is said that everyone is defeated in Parabhavastavatabhudajato. We do so many things. We tried. And there's still hope. We're not giving up. But so far, still defeated. Didn't make it. So who can say that they are not defeated in the material world? Everyone. The ideal not attained. Yes. But it says, everyone is defeated except those who are inquiring into the Absolute Truth. they are not defeated. So that is the only way out. Otherwise, defeated, no matter what. Otherwise, we have the material life, the pavarga. Pavarga is, well, part of the Sanskrit alphabet. The Sanskrit alphabet is kind of scientific, the way they divide up sounds, and they have sounds which are made with the lips, labials, they call them, technically speaking. And such labials are including sounds like pa, yeah, pa, ba, ba, and this one I forgot. Pa, ba, pa, fa. That's it. See, I forgot fa. Pa, fa, then ba, ba, and then ma. Ma comes at the end. Because pa for parisram, for hard work. Then fa for foam on the mouth, like a horse. Such hard work. That such an endeavor. We sweat, we try everything. So hard we try for happiness. And then ba, birtata, frustration. Still didn't work. I tried everything and still didn't work. Oh well, you know, you got to learn in life to settle for what comes and be happy with what comes. Sounds horrible. Can't I just be like totally happy? No, you have to be, you know, sort of happy with the, you know, with your quota. Quota. Yeah. Like, come on. Fool. Happiness. Pa, fa, ba. Yes, frustration. Then not only that, not only frustration, there's also ba, baya, fear. Fear of anything that can happen. Murphy's Law, or whatever can go wrong, will go wrong. Holy. I hope nothing will go wrong. Fear. And in the end, death. Mrityu. In the end, death. So this is the pavarga. Pavarga is symbolizing material life. It's that it expresses the five features of material life. So this is the situation. So, yeah, we're trying to deal with it as good as we can, and we try to be Krishna conscious at the same time, but even there, you know, there seems to be a bit of birtata, a bit of frustration as well. Not quite as pure as I would have liked to be. Still not like grown wings. Are they coming or what? Man, just not these. Where are my wings, you know?
It's like
all this time chanting Hare Krishna, still no wings. How long does it have to wait? Like that. Yeah. I have all these religious cartoons, and you see these two angels, one on a cloud, one fat angel and one skinny angel, and the fat angel is he's eating the halo from above the head. Anyway, what to do? Can we even imagine the spiritual world? Can we imagine it? It's not possible. Now that I'm talking about my religious cartoons, I have another one of a monk who is in a monastery. And he's got a lawnmower and he's cutting the grass. And at one point, he writes on the grass, "God, I am bored." Oh gosh, you know. Is it all a life of denial? You know, It's not allowed. That's not allowed. No meat, fish, eggs, no gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex, you know, and so on. Yes. Prescribed duty. Is it a life of prescribed duty? Prabhu, there is a process to do things properly. I mean, but what about the horse that is running free in the prairie? What about, like, no reins, no limitations, just break loose and just be free, be real? What about that? Any space for that in spiritual life? Or are we going to be in the monastery and one day also right in the grass? I am bored. So, spiritual life, it's depicted as very simple. Just chant and be happy, but it seems to be more complicated. But really, if we somehow or other bring Krishna into the picture, then eventually happiness will come. That is certain. That is just the sure formula. If we just bring Krishna in the picture. That's what basically Srimad Bhagavatam is doing. It brings Krishna in the picture. And it's all just discuss about Krishna. In the beginning, we may not fully be in ecstasy discussing about Krishna, but still, that's what will do it, without a doubt. More Krishna in the picture. Okay, let's hear about Krishna. Well, where to begin? Well, maybe begin with Krishna's qualities. It's said that Lakshmi Devi, she was looking at all the personalities in the universe, and she said, they all have faults. This one is proud. That one is full of fear. That one is dishonest. Who has all good qualities? Even Lord Shiva, she was saying, is in a place, the crematorium and such places. Even there, some apparent fault, she said carefully. Yeah. But even there, she could not find satisfaction in no one. Because she said, no one has all the qualities of Krishna in full. No one. Everyone has the qualities of Krishna to some extent. So everyone has some good qualities, and then you will find also something lacking. Yes, you'll find some fault. Of course, we are looking at Srila Prabhupada as like perfect, right? As a perfect human being. And that establishes the principle that it is possible that one gets all these qualities. It just shows who Prabhupada is. In the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, when Gopakumar is on his journey, and Gopakumar, as we know, is going to higher and higher places, each time seeking out a higher place. He travels throughout the universe on the strength of chanting his mantra, which he received from his guru. And he comes to higher planetary regions above the heavenly planets, above the places where you have wings, higher still. Yeah, they can go higher than that. Whoa. Hey, higher than wings, right? Gopakumar, and he comes on the planets of the Siddhaloka, beyond the heavenly regions. So, there, the Maharjana and Tapaloka. So he's in the Tapaloka. And in Tapaloka, it is said it is predominated by the four Kumaras, and particularly Sanat Kumar. Right. So, at one point, Sanat Kumar appears. But the interesting thing is that Sanat Kumar is not just from that Tapaloka. It's that Sanat Kumar is a Shakti Avesh avatar. And therefore, he is simultaneously in the spiritual world and there in that place. And when he appears, he is so effulgent. It is just inconceivable, because he brings with him the effulgence of the spiritual world. And therefore he brings with him the opulences of the spiritual world. And being empowered by Krishna, he's practically reflecting the glories of Krishna. So this is Shakti Avesh. Shakti Avesh. It is described by Sanatana Goswami like that. So Srila Prabhupada is Shakti Avesh avatar. So the Shakti, how do you know? How do you know? Well, the first time I heard some evidence for it was from Jagadish Prabhu, who was like senior disciple of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada made him one of his GBCs in 1975. So, and he was put him in charge of all the Gurukulas. So anyway, Jagadish, he gave this talk in 1980, and he started, and he said that Prabhupada is predicted in the Bhagavatam. He's explaining that Prabhupada is predicted in the Bhagavatam. He's there. It's like, really? And then he started, Tatvat Visargo Janataka Viprabhu Yasmin Pratislokam Abadavati Api Namanyanyantasi Asamkitani Yat Srimanti Griyanti Griyanti Sadhava. He started to explain that actually it is through this Bhagavatam that a revolution will come about in the misdirected life of a misguided civilization. And through Srimad Bhagavatam, even if it may be imperfectly composed, but this Bhagavatam will be heard and sung by men who are thoroughly honest. And then Jagadish explained that, and then Srila Prabhupada came across the Atlantic Ocean on the Java Duta. And he had only, 20 rupees or something like, 40, that's right, yeah, 40 rupees. I know it was wrong, but it was very little, 40 rupees. 40 rupees, so that's a very small amount. But that was not all he had. He also had a trunk of Bhagavatams, which were printed in India, and he was carrying this trunk of Bhagavatams with him. And he was, there was some arrangement that, that this Gopal Agarwal, some acquaintance, through Srimati Morarji, I think it was, if I remember. Anyway, Gopal Agarwal was arranged, was going to pick up Prabhupada and take him to Buffalo and put him up somewhere upon his arrival in the YMCA. And Prabhupada did a lecture in Buffalo. And in that first lecture, Prabhupada came very early, and he was sitting already in the lecture hall on a chair, where the audience was supposed to come and sit. So one man came also, and he sat next to Prabhupada. And
And then
Prabhupada just was chatting with him, and it was very nice. And then the hall filled up with people, and the organizer came and announced that this evening we are very happy to host our guest speaker, Swami A.C. Bhaktivedanta, and so on, Prabhupada. Okay, not yet Prabhupada. But he introduced him, and then Prabhupada sort of stood up. And as he stood up, he said to the man who sat next to him, can you look after this box for me? And after the lecture, Prabhupada spoke about Bhagavatam, that he had the Bhagavatam. And then he asked that man, sir, could you just open that box? Could you take out one book? Yes, he took out one book, yes, Bhagavatam. And then, Prabhupada said, yes, if you're interested, you can take it from him, sir. Would you mind keeping the money? Yes, and he engaged him in selling the Bhagavatam. And Prabhupada said that the Bhagavatam should be in every house on the planet. But then he considered his mission, his book distribution mission, really fulfilled. And Bhagavatam would be in every house on the planet. So quite ambitious and a huge task. Because without Bhagavatam, it's not complete. Without Bhagavatam, it's not fully there. Because after all, Bhagavad Gita establishes that Krishna is the supreme, aham savashibhavo matasavam pravartite, and that we worship him with love. But the Bhagavad Gita does not describe Krishna in detail. That's the Bhagavatam. Only the Bhagavatam describes Krishna in detail. And ultimately, it's there where that love will awaken. So Lord Brahma, he was in a somewhat awkward situation because, he was Lord Brahma. Peter Maha, excuse me, the grandfather. No, you're laughing, you're not taking it seriously, but the grandfather of the entire universe, a nice lotus also to sit on, kind of large, and comfy, really impressive to say the least. It grows from the navel of the Lord, by the way. So what can be said? So Lord Brahma is sitting there looking, upon all these various creatures, all the creatures that he has created in the universe. Yes, all of them. I created them, really. Yeah, nice. I did a nice job, isn't it? Yes, benevolent. No. He's the well-wisher of all the creatures, Lord Brahma. He is, yes. He's the creator, yes. Not the Supreme Lord, but the creator on behalf of the Supreme Lord. Yes. And that's Lord Brahma. So then suddenly, there is this, there's this boy in Vrindavan, and as of late, the boy has really done well, especially for a young child. Killed some demons, big powerful ones, I'm not to underestimate him, big serpent, etc. Then, to crown the whole thing, he lifts Govardhan Hill. Now, that's not a small feat. I would say that's kind of. It's impressive, right? Absolutely. And these residents of his area, of course, they are totally blown out because they're simple village folks, so they don't quite get it in proper perspective. You know what I'm saying? It's like lifting hills, and I am putting planets in their position, hills and planets, what I'm talking about? really, hills and planets. Anyhow, so in this way, I think I should show he has obviously some mystic power. There's this boy. There's no doubt about it. You know, he must have. You know, otherwise, how can he do these things? But maybe now I should just show, like, you know, I mean, what kind of mystic power, like, you know, I have, so that people see things in proper perspective. And he stole all the calves and cowherd boys and just put them away in a cave somewhere asleep, and then went back to that place where he had taken away and waiting to see the face of Krishna when his friends and calves would be gone. But when he came back, they were still there. So, what was that? And I just took them away. It's just like, did they come back here? He went to the cave, they were still there. Up and down. It's just like, you know, what's going on in those places? So he was getting bewildered by what was going on. And then they took all four armed Vishnu forms, Vishnu Murtis. And when he saw these Vishnu Murtis, then that just blew his mind. And why was it so? Because Vishnu Murtis have four arms, you know what I'm saying? And like four arms means Supreme Lord. That he could figure out, like that boy Krishna, you know, some yogurt and rice in his hands, mixed with some banana, pieces of banana, okay, you know, some cowherd boy, but four hands. All the boys, all the cowherd boys, all the calves had now transformed into four-handed Vishnu forms. He's looking at endless Vishnu forms and he just realizes, like, he realizes what's going on, and he begins to realize that he's made sort of a terrible mistake, and that he's sort of like, it's been like challenging a personality who's much more powerful than him. And what if that personality becomes angry? So Lord Brahma is very intelligent, because Lord Brahma has a body made of pure intelligence, so it is said. I mean, you know, not a body of pure ignorance like we have, yeah, but a body of pure intelligence. So therefore Lord Brahma is extremely intelligent. So Lord Brahma began to offer prayers. And he said, my dear Lord, I appeared in this universe from you only, on the lotus that came from your navel. He said, therefore you are my origin, therefore you are both my father and my mother. Then he says, a parent doesn't get very upset with the child, even when the child is, you know, passing stool on the lap of the parents. Still, the parents love the child and don't take it very serious, you know. Okay, just sort of. So his prayers are like a full of like manipulative arrangements to sort of make sure that Krishna will not punish him for what he has just done. And then he's counting. He's saying, oh my Lord, maybe one day the scientist will be able to count all the atoms in the universe. Maybe one day they will be able to count all the snowflakes in the sky. Okay, that's not so easy. Of course, here it's easy because there are no snowflakes. But you know, in places with snowflakes, it's hard to count them. Hard. Very hard. So, but maybe the scientists will pull it off one day. Count the snowflakes. Okay, we have to advance a little bit from where we are now. So, but still, even if one can count the snowflakes or all the atoms in the universe, one can still not know qualities of you, my Lord. The qualities of the Supreme Lord are unlimited. So with this, Lord Brahma has raised a very important point. The qualities of Krishna are unlimited. And yet, there are other deities that are also very powerful. Like Lord Shiva is extremely powerful. Extremely powerful. It's like, Lord Shiva can destroy the whole universe. No problem. Just like that. In a snap. It's nothing to him. So Lord Shiva is extremely powerful. But what Lord Shiva doesn't have is what Krishna has. That Krishna has these human qualities. He's so human. He's a child. He stands there like a child. And with that yogurt and those bananas and little rice mixed like small child. Kajal around his eyes. Dressed with a string and a little bell. Nothing else. Just the air. What can be said? He's a child, Krishna. And but that child sometimes shows superhuman features. And that makes it all very sweet. See, otherwise, if it's just, here's the Lord, the all-powerful Lord. And what did he do today? He lifted a mountain today. And what did he do yesterday? Yesterday he sent thunderbolts all the way around on the heads of demons. Far out. What does he do on Thursday? So on Thursday the oceans were overflooding, land and all the materialists were drowned. Well, he's so powerful. And then, anything good happened? Yes, it was also raining, bread from the sky. Heavenly bread, manna, heavenly bread, and all that. That's when he's unlimitedly powerful, right? It's like, but he's not. They're telling Yasoda, the neighbors are telling Yasoda, what are you doing, I mean, you're tying up the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yasoda, what are you doing? Nobody can tie up the Supreme Lord, Yasoda says. Like, he's the Supreme Lord, he is like fear personified, and everyone is afraid of him. Then why is he so scared when I raise a stick? Come on, is he fear personified? He cries, he's just a baby, right? So she's not at all convinced, no way, Garga Muni said that my son will have the divine qualities of Narayan, but I'm telling you, Nanda Maharaj, the neighbors say, Nanda Maharaj, why? Are you chastising your son Krishna? Says, it's my duty. He's my son. But Nanda Maharaj, don't you know that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Nanda Maharaj is saying, look, I don't know why you are all saying that Krishna is such a wonderful child. Why are you saying this? Look. We go through so much trouble to feed him the best of the best at home. We bring in all kinds of cooks, and they are preparing endless preparations. Every day, a huge feast. Radharani comes, because she has the blessings. Durvasa Muni Rohini, she's in the kitchen from early, early in the morning, cooking it up. So many servants. Yasoda, she personally feeds like milk, the best grass that she can find, to the best cows. And then she personally milks these cows to get the best milk. And from this best milk, she makes the best milk sweets for Krishna so that he will stop stealing butter. But in spite of everything we do for him, after we feed him,
Then he goes to the houses of the neighbors and he has breakfast there. He goes from house to house and he has breakfast and just stays breakfast time and he just has breakfast and breakfast and breakfast. And it's like, I tell you, this boy is extremely lusty. After that, he goes and he steals butter and all these things. So many complaints. Why are you saying he's wonderful? I tell you, he's a problem child. And I will correct him because it's my duty as his father. So in this way, Krishna is so sweet. We hear about the sweetness of Krishna. The sweetness of Krishna. And what is the sweetness of Krishna? The sweetness of Krishna is that he has simultaneously these human-like features that limit him. You know what I'm saying? Human beings are very fragile and very limited, you know? I mean, you know, you stand on the tip of your toes and still you can't reach it. That's human being. Right? You try and hit the high note. Difficult. Limited. Limited. These high notes. What to do? So Krishna, the human limitations, Krishna shows human limitations. And then the supernatural is mixed in. And that makes it very sweet. Because it brings him so close to us. And he does everything in a human way. Like, you know, walking into the mouth of Akasura. He doesn't have to walk into the mouth of Akasura. He can just go like, he can blow and the snake flies away, you know. Huge storm. Or he can just sit there and suddenly the snake just goes up into ashes or whatever. By his will. Everything goes on by his will. He doesn't need to work. Atasyakariyam karanam savijyate. The Supreme Lord has no work to perform. Parasya shakti vividai vasuyate. They're all his energies. Like today I was reading about Lakshmi. And it said that Lakshmi was saying that Krishna has all good qualities. He has all opulences. Right? And he's fully satisfied within himself. And therefore, he doesn't desire me. I am desired by all. I am giving wealth, unlimited wealth I have. And Krishna doesn't desire. She's not a very happy statement. And then it's explained. And it says that Krishna has unlimited opulences. And that these opulences have two features. It is said, one is the opulences that are within Krishna's body. And the other is all the other opulences that are outside of Krishna's body. Said, and that is controlled by Lakshmi. But these are Krishna's opulence. Therefore, Lakshmi actually is just, is Krishna's energy. And that's it. Therefore, he doesn't desire her. So it is explained. Yes. He doesn't desire all these opulences. But he has all these opulences and so on. But meanwhile, a village boy, meanwhile, a human being. And that's the If you speak about Krishna's sweetness, that is the unique sweetness of Krishna. And then, of course, yeah, he does things that are aesthetic to us. And, I mean, I've spoken on this topic of the universal form, and that it's like not very easy to love the universal form, because you can't dress the universal form, Prabhupada says. You cannot relate to the universal form. The universal form is the very large, unlimited form of God. And how can we have a relationship? Just like, how can a human being have a relationship with an ant? You can try. It's difficult, you know. And first of all, yeah, your favorite ant. I love my ant, but anyway, you know. And then he suddenly goes in the middle of many other ants. Which one is it? You know, oh gosh, where's my ant? Which one is it? Now, you can do something about that. You can paint your ant, you know. Right? With fluorescent yellow paint, you know what I mean? So, it's not healthy for the ant, though, but anyway. Say you paint your ant, and you can sort of see him. Ah, that's nice. There goes my ant, you know. And then you show your ant, like, a little bit of affection, you know. A coochie, coochie, goo. Oh, sorry. Broke two of his legs. Ah, well, what do you do, you know? He's so small. Okay. Carefully pick him up. Didn't crush him too much today. Anti. It's like too small, difficult to have a relationship. So if we look at the greatness of God, you know, how can we have a relationship with him? That's the thing. Very difficult. But when he becomes Krishna, there's the sweetness of his human nature, and he does things in a human way. So he enters into the mouth of Agasura, of a huge snake. Oh no! Oh my God! I mean, you know, I mean, you don't do things like that, you know what I mean? Nobody does things like that. Go into the mouth of a big snake. Oh no! Oh no! And Krishna did it. Oh no! Ooh! It doesn't look good. Snake. It's like, see, relating to our feelings, and in this way Krishna wakes up all these feelings in us, and that exchange, that makes it very sweet. And therefore, of all manifestations of the Supreme Lord, there is no manifestation like Krishna, and therefore the gopis, after the rasa dance, when Krishna disappeared, and they were looking for Krishna everywhere, they saw Lord Narayan. They immediately offered their obeisances. My dear Lord Narayan, my dear Supreme Personality of Godhead, please accept your most humble obeisances. Have you seen Krishna? Yeah. That's a devotee. Kechit kivalaya bhaktya vasavya paraya. Only Krishna. All right, so like this, we meditate simply a little tonight about Krishna, talk a bit about Krishna. And on the basis of Srimad Bhagavatam, because the Bhagavatam talks about Krishna, and like this, I just wanted to spend an evening with Krishna. And may Krishna always be visible on the path of our eyes. Any questions? Any comments?
Krishna, I was thinking, you said you were reading about Lakshmi Devi, and I was thinking about the last time where she wasn't, another lamentation, that she wasn't able to enter the Rasa dance, so she got the position of the golden lion on the door's tooth. So I mean, if you could speak a little bit.
Yeah. Krishna is soft-hearted and merciful. So she's getting mercy for her service. So she is there, the golden line on the chest of the Lord. She is Krishna's opulence personified. She is controlling all this unlimited wealth and opulence, as Jiva Goswami explains it. All that energy outside of Krishna, all that opulence, she's controlling. Everything outside his body, that she's controlling. So that was a really interesting definition, I thought. And then and because she is representing that, she cannot come into the Vrindavan pastimes. It's not possible, because that would interfere with the human nature of these pastimes. She would bring in all these unlimited supernatural powers, and they don't fit. It's the lack of all these powers that make the Vrindavan pastimes so special, and then sometimes the powers there manifesting. Krishna and Balaram are small boys, and they stand facing huge wrestlers that tower over them. I mean, monsters of men with huge muscles, you know, like, I mean, and they're only boys. I mean, what's going to happen? You know, I mean, it's going to be, like, terrible. I mean, these wrestlers are going to rip these kids to pieces. But it didn't quite happen like that, because when Krishna hit Chanura on the head, then the eyes of Chanura popped out of the sockets. So it wasn't quite like what people thought it was going to be. Yeah, it was a surprise. So Lakshmi doesn't fit in this setting, but she gets mercy anyway, because Krishna's merciful.
Can I ask, don't we hear the word, what do you say?
Did he what?
With Krishna's hard mouth, like you say, some word like that.
Krishna's hard mouth.
Yeah.
What's the word?
Yeah.
Is that the word?
Yes.
You spoke about it. You got a reference to Brahman on social media. Brahma, you want Lila, and you spoke something about Lord Shiva. So, especially in 9th canto, you know, come across where Vishnu is also compared as one of the demigods. Like, you know, Brahma,
right, as one of what?
Demigods, like Brahma.
Demigod.
Brahma, Vishnu, and Mahesha. So, like, you know, Vishnu is Supreme Person of Godhead. So, the Prabhupada actually. He also in purport, you know, he writes as one of the demigods. So, why is it like that?
Bewildering, isn't it?
Yeah.
But of course, Bhagavatam makes it clear. It's like, he's also fulfilling a function like one of the demigods. Just like all the demigods are taking care of all the things, Krishna takes the post. He takes a post, just like the others. Brahma takes the post for the creation, Lord Shiva takes the post for the destruction. And then, for maintenance, there was no one. No one to fill the post. Because creation is a one-time energy. Destruction is a one-time energy. But maintenance is unlimited energy, because it goes on over unlimited time. Therefore, no one has had unlimited energy. For everyone, there was a limit to his energy. So there was no one amongst the demigods, due to their limited energy, who could take that post to maintain. So Lord Vishnu himself took that post. And he did that work himself of maintaining, because it took unlimited energy, and only he is unlimited. So as the Supreme Lord, he did the work. This was actually the work of the demigods, maintaining the material energy, but he took that role in that sense. otherwise. You know, Hiranyakasipu knew it well, that Lord Vishnu is different, see? He said, the demigods, they are our natural enemies, right? But Vishnu, he's the Supreme Lord, he's impartial. Scriptures say that Vishnu is impartial, but as of late, because of the worship of the demigods, Vishnu has given up his impartiality. And since then, you know, he has killed my brother, and I will destroy him. But I have heard that he's hiding. He's gone into hiding. He's gone into hiding in the hearts of all the living beings. This Vishnu. So even Hiranyakasipu knows that Vishnu is different. He knows. So scriptures are giving Lord Vishnu the unique position. So these kind of statements should not bewilder us.
You wanted to mention that if a living entity is not in position, like somebody is not in position to take the role of Brahma, then Lord Krishna himself, you know, addresses
that position. Sometimes he also takes these positions. Sometimes, when there's no suitable living entity, he takes the position of Brahma. But never is there a living entity who can do that work of the maintenance. Only Vishnu can do. Because, as I said, it takes unlimited energy, and nobody has. There's always a limit to the power of the greatest demigod. If only the Supreme Lord could.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, I don't know if I understand this correctly, but please correct me if I'm wrong. Since Krishna appeared on earth, many people know about him, especially in India, and now his fame is spreading all over the world. So it's not as confidential in one sense. And as I understand, it was almost more confidential in previous ages. Or is that wrong?
No, you're not wrong. Manushyadam sahasvesu kaschit yatatisidhiye yatatam abhisidhanam kaschimam vrittitattvataha. Out of many thousands among men, you know, hardly one knows me in truth. And out of those who know me in truth, like very few are endeavoring for perfection. And out of those who are endeavoring for perfection, only one will attain it, you know. So it's very rare, very, very rare. And Lord Chaitanya changes it all. See, so now we are talking here, you know, about Krishna and all these things in, you know, just at the side of the Rondebosch station. That's not what the Rondebosch station was made for, if you know what I mean. People don't board the train for Hare Krishna, but now so many people on the train can hear that kirtan in the morning, you know, which is loud, especially in the summer when the door is open, and it's like, and you see sometimes people on the stairs. I'm upstairs, so I can see what goes on the platform, and I see people on the platform making moves, right? The kirtan is definitely reaching whatever goes on the train. So in this way, it's just spreading everywhere.
So, a question I wanted to ask. If Krishna is so sweet, why didn't people quickly tell each other in previous ages, this is like the best form of God? Is it because Lord Chaitanya gives us actually a special ability to experience?
Not only an ability, but just gives us that knowledge. You know, the flowery language of the Vedas, the flowery words of the Vedas. The Vedas are very vast. There is so much knowledge. And then there's all these Brahmanas who are very learned and great pundits, you know. Just because there was a Srila Prabhupada, who cuts right through all that, you know. If you go into India, you know what I mean? Imagine no Prabhupada. And now you have to go into India and figure it out yourself, you know what I mean? You have to find Krishna in the midst of all that, you know, and there's like millions of temples and there's people chewing pan and priests walking around and smoke and rituals and lots of fruits and things. I mean, you're looking at it all like, you know, what's going on here? And then you see a poster of Ganesh and he's an elephant and he's riding on a rat, you know. Okay. I mean, it's too complicated, you know. Too complicated. Then you see something on TV and you see that in Gujarat there is a temple that where they feed the rats. And it's like filled with rats. The rat, you know, I mean, it's a Ganesh temple that's just full of rats. I mean, I see it on TV. I didn't go there. I'm not particularly planning to go there either. It's okay, but I see it on TV. Yeah. How can you figure this out? All these things. But Prabhupada makes it crystal clear, very simple, and suddenly puts forward Srimad Bhagavatam. Go, geez. Srimad Bhagavatam, what's that? You know what I mean? There it is, you know. And present it in an understandable way with purports that bring in commentaries of great scholars that sort of bring out the pure bhakti. Otherwise, you know, like you can look on the internet and type in Bhagavad Purana and you get so many, you know, and you can download them on your Kindle and get totally confused. Because they just missed the point. You know, they explain to you the Bhagavad Purana and they miss the one point, which is Krishna. That's right. They miss Krishna. See? Yeah. So it's Prabhupada who brought Lord Chaitanya's mercy to us and made it crystal clear. Now for us, yeah, so clear. And the clarity of Prabhupada's books speaks to people. See, it's not fuzzy. And there's so many spiritual books that are very like fuzzy type of misty, mystical, you know what I mean? The Prabhupada's books are like very, very sober, you know, sometimes too sober. Yeah, I was with this group of people in my earlier days in Krishna consciousness. I had some traumatic experiences in the Hare Krishna movement, and I took a vacation. And I had no money. I was in India, and I went to stay in the tourist camp. This was very cheap. And then there were these young people and they were sitting on the grass and they had a guitar and they were singing a song which all of them knew. And that song was like, it was a song that described all the things that go wrong in the world, you know. And then, so it described different things that go wrong, and then the chorus was, but fortunately, we have the key to escape reality, right? And then the chill was going around. I tell you, I hated that song. I thought, that's horrible. That's horrible. You fool yourself, you know what I mean? Fortunately, we have the key to escape reality, but it doesn't make it any better. It is like, you know, tweet, you know. I was stoned out of my head. But at the same time, right, reality is still the same. Gosh. Yeah. So, people like the misty stuff, you know what I mean? false solutions. Yeah. But proper, straight, completely straight, honest, thoroughly honest, they say. The Bhagavatam is heard and sung by men who are thoroughly honest. He is thoroughly honest. Oh, gosh, sometimes too much. Too thoroughly honest. Give us a break. But let me keep a little bit of my false ego. Yeah. Okay. Thanks very much. See you later.